American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive, it's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And it is a good day. This is Ryan Robson reporting to you from the internet for Monday, October 3rd, 2011. And you are listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global sit-rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. Also standing up for free speech today by not going to a protest, apparently, is Misanthropic Gods.
You can follow these news stories and check our facts by going to the Rant Media forums and looking under Newsreel for a post of today's date. You can get there by going to smf.rantradio.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio Talk, Galaxy 15 Radio, most weeks, not now, and recorded live in Second Life every Thursday night at 7 p.m. SL time at Grid Archers, 155-74666. What we need most of all right now is your support. If you have something to send us, please email us at news@rostudios.org. That is news@rostudios.org. Joining us live in Second Life today, we have Flash Dewey Adder, Legion Rosenman, Anastasia Jennings, 1122, and Dark One Sunkiller.
Okay, so a lot of you have sent us the story about the neutrinos moving faster than light. It's such a mainstream story, I didn't really want to read it on the show, but I feel I should say a few things about it anyway, because it's pretty big. The results still need to pass peer review. There are some things that could have went wrong with the experiment, the equipment, their calculations, anything like that, which is why they're publishing their findings like the way they are right now, is so other researchers with the resources can check their findings and make sure it's all accurate. But I've actually looked at the paper that the researcher put out, and it looks really promising. They ran the experiment 16,000 times and got the same result every time. I'm always a little wary of announcements like this from the mainstream media, because they like to overhype it. But if this holds up, it's kind of hard to understate how important this is to our understanding of physics. I'm not really educated enough to, on this level of physics, to make any kind of predictions or elaborate too much on what huge sweeping implications this could have, so I'm just really going to leave it at that. And move into feedback, which we got a little bit of feedback this week from Fat Ninja. This is about the RF radio transmitters we did a little bit ago. Misanthropic Gods mentioned something about how all the RF noise in the city is giving him trouble with his RF transmitter in his car stereo. He's probably already tried this, but in case he hasn't, I'd recommend that he retract his car's antenna if at all possible. Those transmitters seem to work fine even with the antenna retracted.
Well, now, you see, the thing is, Fat Ninja, I don't have a retractable antenna. I have one that you have to unscrew and physically take off to actually do that. So A, it's a pain in the ass, and B, even then, there's so much RF saturation here in this urban area that it's just, even then, you're still getting cut in a little bit if you're, you know, driving around the city and you get close to a transmitter. It just totally overrides it, even if you don't have an antenna. So it kind of solves the problem a little bit, but not you know, great, not adequately, unfortunately.
Well, if you have a retractable antenna, that's a good solution. If not, then, well, you're out of luck. So moving right along into the news. In prominent veins equals terrorism news, thanks to the doctor. NYPD teaches nightclubs to look out for possible terrorists with bulging veins in the neck. The NYPD's updated guide to bolstering the safety of city nightclubs offers tips on how to spot patrons who are bombed, as well as who are carrying bombs. A little bit of a pun there. The 27-page booklet, titled Best Practices for Nightlife Establishments, advises owners to be cautious about nervous customers who are sweating profusely and with bulging veins in the neck. Counterterrorism security plans should include training for all staff in the detection of possible suicide bombers, the guide released Monday says. Police Commissioner Raymond Kelly insisted the guide, produced in conjunction with the New York Nightlife Association, is not meant to alarm, but help owners and operators craft effective strategy for terrorism prevention and preparedness. on how to spot would-be terrorists, the guide recommends being alert on people with visible wires and tape protruding from their clothing and individuals who are obviously disguised. Nightlife workers should also be aware of people casing establishments by photographing or videotaping. Be on the lookout for people with suspicious bags and identical bags being carried by several individuals, the guide suggests. So apparently, if you're trendy, you're a terrorist. The booklet also has plenty of tips on how to spot plastered patrons, advising that they're usually ones with slurred speech and bloodshot eyes who appear sick, confused, abusive, profane, antagonistic, or incoherent.
You know, if you need help figuring out if someone's drunk or high or anything like that, and you're working at a nightclub, you are not working in the right place. If you need help doing that, get another job. You know, and this whole thing with suspicious bags or identical bags, what the hell happens with the whole bunch of wogs come walking in, you know? And we're all, you know, a good number of us identify as goth, so I would have to say, you know, I have a whole bunch of goth up crazy people with a whole bunch of, you know, Maxpedition bags and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, they're going to think we're terrorists, which we're not. I really, you know, and then this whole thing with the whole vein thing, like, what the fuck is that all supposed to be? Is that supposed to be this, or the fuck is it all? You know, this thing is just another, you know, example of this whole Homeland Security bullshit being taken way, way too seriously. You know, people are alert. You know, nightclub bouncers and stuff are alert for people that they think are going to cause problems. So if they think they're going to cause problems, they're probably going to intervene. They're going to intervene, not call the fucking Homeland Security. You know, and this is really, really ridiculous. You know, New York City seems to be especially freaked out. I mean, and that's kind of understandable given what would happen with 9/11 and everything, and how it's really close to home to all of them, you know. But, I mean, like, Jesus Christ. And, you know, the thing that pisses me off the most out of this whole article is that whole thing about casing establishments by photographing or videotaping. That means that now if you're a photographer, if you're, you know, doing photographs in an urban area, yeah, guess what? Now you're being labeled a terrorist. I've actually seen this happen quite a number of times, you know, and in regards to my book that I'm writing, actually a lot of these sites are on U.S. military reserve, you know, reserve bases, which are, you know, just reserve centers, which are little almost quasi bases, quote unquote. You know, there are a couple of buildings and some parking and a parking lot. That's pretty much all that it is. And you know, the Nike missiles, once they were decommissioned, the sites were you know, either kept within the military and they were essentially said, hey, here's land, you can build your shit on it if you want it, or they were, you know, sold for dirt cheap, like where I'm talking about like a dollar for the whole site. So you know, a lot of these turned up in reserve centers, and now I've tried, you know, talking to a public affairs officer for a local one, and I've just been running into tons and tons of issues. You know, it's this whole issue with, you know, oh, do you have a press pass? Well, what are you doing with the media? Like, what are you writing your book on? What are you doing? I want to, you know, give me a copy of your driver's license. I want to know what you're doing. I'll have to talk to my superiors and get it cleared. And, you know, this whole thing with photographers being, you know, villainized because it's suspicious. Dude, have you fucking heard of Google Earth? You know, Street View, you know, Bing Maps, any stuff like that? Like, holy crap, you don't need to send a photographer to go do it. You know, there's already photographs on it online that you can get for free, easy. You can get satellite photographs, you can get, you know, photographs from the ground, you can get pretty much anything. You know, you don't need to send a fucking photographer out there with a big ass camera. It's fucking stupid bullshit.
The thing that strikes me most about this article here is not necessarily the things like that, but the fact that this article is about half common sense. Like, if someone's slurring their speech and getting all pissed off, they're probably drunk. And the other half is just kind of retarded. Like, you know, someone walking into your club with wires and stuff sticking out of their coat. I'm gonna guess that most people would think there's something wrong with that. But, you know, you've got things like the bulging veins. If I seen someone with bulging veins in their neck, I would probably be more along the lines thinking that this guy's having some sort of circulatory problem, and not that he's got a bomb. I don't know how bomb and bulging veins link. Am I a terrorist because I happen to have big veins on my arms? It's like, come on. I don't know where they're getting this information from or why they think they're at all related, but this is kind of scary. I almost think that they're trying to just make everyone into a terrorist so they don't have to be so picky and choosy about who they arrest?
That's probably a good stuff in there.
Well, in more craziness news, we have MU Don't Own Your Computer news, thanks to Wyandi. UEFI Secure Booting. Since there's probably going to be some questions, this is from a forum post, by the way. Since there's probably going to be some questions about this in the near future, the UEFI Secure Boot Protocol is part of the recent UEFI specification releases. It permits one or more signing keys to be installed into a system firmware. Once enabled, Secure Boot prevents executables or drivers from being loaded unless they're signed by one of these keys. Another set of keys, PKEK, permits communication between OS and the firmware. An OS with PKEK matching that installed in the firmware may add additional keys to the whitelist. Alternatively, it may add keys to a blacklist. Binary signed with a blacklisted key will not be used. There is no centralized signing authority for UEFI keys. If a vendor key is installed in the machine, the only way to get code signed with that key is to get the vendor to perform the signing. The machine may have several keys installed, but if you are unable to get any of them to sign your binary, then it won't be installable. This impacts both software and hardware vendors. An OS vendor cannot boot their software on a system unless it's signed with a key that's already included in the system firmware. A hardware vendor cannot run their hardware inside the EFI environment unless their drivers are signed with the key that's included in the system firmware. If you install a new graphics card that either has unsigned drivers or drivers that is signed with a key that's not in your system firmware, you'll get no graphics support in the firmware. Microsoft requires that machines conforming to the Windows 8 logo program and running a client version of Windows 8 ship with Secure Boot enabled. The two alternatives here are for Windows to be signed with a Microsoft key and for the public part of the key to be included with all systems, or alternatively for each OEM to include their own key and sign the pre-installed versions of Windows. The second approach would make it impossible to run box copies of Windows on Windows logo hardware, and also impossible to install new versions of Windows unless your OEM provided a new signed copy. The former seems more likely. A system that ships with only OEM and Microsoft keys will not boot a generic copy of Linux. So, to the non-technical people who don't really understand what this means that any software isn't approved by one of the vendors already involved in your machine won't work. And this includes hardware too. So if you go buy a video card, or if you want to go put Linux on it, if your vendor, whoever's making the signing keys for your machine, doesn't approve of that software or hardware, you can't run it.
This, I think, is essentially suicide if Microsoft does decide to go through with this. You know, this is, you know, wrong on so many levels. I mean, I bought this fucking machine. It should be mine to do with what I will. If I want to take it out back and shoot it with the shotgun, I should be able to do that. If I want to install, you know, shitty fucking hardware on mine, yeah, I should be able to do that. If I want to, you know, install some shitty hardware from China, I should be able to do that. You know, this is just absolutely wrong, you know, and this, I don't think that this would be the end of open source. I think this would be completely the rebirth of open source. It's had a lot of, you know, a huge following in the last couple of years, especially. It's been gaining more and more and more steam. You know, it's always had a pretty hardcore group of people around it, and it's just been growing and growing and growing later, and, you know, as it gets closer to now. And if they decide to do this, I think it'll just push a whole hell of a lot of people towards, you know, open source. And I think that people don't want to have their shit locked down like this. You know, and a good number of computer users that I know that aren't, you know, the mainstream, which is, you know, a quite large number of them, people that are more technically inclined, are not going to put up with this. They're just not going to deal with it. They physically wouldn't be able to do what they do with computers if they had this shit happen.
I agree. This is not going to kill. I agree that this isn't going to kill open source. It's probably going to help it a lot. I mean, even look at Apple. They're a company that's pretty much notorious for trying to lock down their stuff, especially on their mobile platforms. But even they haven't done anything this extreme yet. They could jump on board with this, and I wouldn't be terribly surprised. But even they haven't done anything this extreme yet. So that's balls to Microsoft for even, you know, thinking about this. Now, right, they haven't actually said that they're going to make it hard to get the keys signed, so there's no indication that they're actually going to lock out Linux and stuff like that. But they could easily do it here, and there's nothing that anyone could do about it if they chose to lock out Linux and any free software and stuff like that from your machine. And this also would mean that you'd have to get all new software, because old software isn't signed with these keys. So you wouldn't be able to take your old video card or your old copy of Photoshop or anything like that and move it over to your new system, because it wouldn't be signed. Of course, not all the hardware vendors are going to go straight away. So chances are that for at least quite some time, you'll be able to build your own machine without any of this security in it. And you can just install whatever the hell you want on that. And even if that, it doesn't, even if they all jump on board with this and everyone starts doing it, keep your old hardware. Yeah, that's what I do. I keep old hardware, and I think you should too. In Cyberpunk Bank Heist news, thanks to Wyandi, gang used 3D printers for ATM skimmers. An ATM skimmer gang stole more than $400,000 using skimming devices built with the help of high-tech 3D printers, federal prosecutors say. Before I get to the gang, let me explain briefly how ATM skimmers work and why 3D printing is a noteworthy development in this type of fraud. Many of the ATM skimmers profiled in my skimmer series, there's a link in the article, are carefully handmade and crafted to blend in with targeted cash machine in both form and paint color. Some skimmers even ask customers for a photo of a cash machine before beginning their work. Or some skimmer makers even ask customers for a photo. The skimmer components typically include a card skimmer that fits over the card acceptance slot and steals the data recorded on this card's magnetic stripe, and a pinhole camera built into a false panel that thieves can fit above or beside the pin pad. If these components don't match just so, they're more likely to be discovered and removed by customers or bank personnel, leaving the thieves without their stolen card data. And of course, there'd be evidence against them if they were ever caught. Enter the 3D printer. This fascinating technology explained succinctly in the video below and in the link in the article from 3D printing company iMaterialize, takes two-dimensional computer images and builds them into three-dimensional models by laying down successive layers of powder that are heated, shaped, and hardened. Apparently, word is spreading in the cybercrime underworld that 3D printers can produce flawless skimmer devices with exacting precision. Last year, iMaterialize blogged about receiving a client's order for building a card skimmer. The company said it declined their request when it became clear the order product was a fraud device. In June, a federal court indicted four men from South Texas, whom authorities say had reinvested the profits from skimming scams to purchase a 3D printer. According to statements by the U.S. Secret Service, the gang's leader, Jason Lal of Houston, was sent to prison for ATM fraud in 2009. Lal was instrumental in obtaining the skimming devices, and the gang soon found themselves needing to procure their own skimmers. The trouble is, skimmers aren't cheap. They range from $2,000 to more than $10,000 per kit. Which, of course, if you look at 3D printers, they're starting to get down into that $10,000 range, so I can see why they went for the printer.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this just goes to show that criminals are not stupid, and they will utilize the, you know, modern technology to its fullest to be able to, you know, perpetrate their crimes and be able to, you know, do it easier and essentially make money. So, I mean, these guys have the motivation, and if they have the technical know-how, like I said, these guys aren't stupid. They will be able to figure out this stuff and use it against us. So, you know, I generally try and make it a policy of mine to look around the ATM before I, you know, put my card in it or anything. But, you know, that doesn't help. A lot of times, actually, I heard a story, I'm not sure if we actually had it on Newsreel or not, but where they actually had a card skimmer inside the machine. They actually were physically able to put it inside the machine. So, from the outside, you wouldn't even know it was there. So, you know, I mean, this is just, you gotta be, it's so much easier to have stuff in cash, you know, it's a lot safer to have stuff in cash. Unfortunately, you do run the risk of, if something happens, you know, somebody finds out that you only have cash, you know, finds out where you keep it, they could steal it that way as well, you know? But, it just goes to show, you know, criminals aren't stupid.
Yeah, again with the ATM skimmer thing, if, you're going to an ATM and you see, like, a lot of them have card slots that stick out a little bit, I always grab that and pull it. If it comes off, it's a skimmer. If it doesn't, then it's probably legit. But yeah, if they get them inside the machines, there's not much you can do about that. But of course, this just shows how how these criminals think. They tried to get it printed off by the iFabricate guys, which I'm surprised they even tried that. Like, that's a good way to get yourself reported. But after that failed, they just went and got their own printer.
Why did I fall through the chair?
Whoever is broadcasting right now, your mic is hot.
In memory recording news, thanks to Wyandi. Brain imaging reveals that the movie's in our minds. Scientists at the University of California at Berkeley have managed to decode and reconstruct dynamic visual experiences processed by the human brain. Currently, the researchers are only able to reconstruct movie clips that have already been viewed. However, the breakthrough is expected to pave the way for reproducing movies inside our head that no one else sees, such as dreams and memories. And I imagine things you think up would probably also count as that. This is a major leap forward in reconstructing internal imagery, explained Professor Jack Gallant, a UC Berkeley neuroscientist and co-author of the study published online today in the journal Current Biology. We are opening a window into movies in our minds. According to Gallant, the practical applications of technology could eventually include a better understanding of what is happening in the minds of those who cannot communicate verbally, such as stroke victims, coma patients, and individuals with neurodegenerative diseases. It may also lay the groundwork for brain-machine interfaces so people with cerebral palsy or paralysis can guide computers with their minds. Nevertheless, researchers emphasize the brain imaging technology is still decades away from allowing users to read thoughts and intentions, a theme which is prevalent in numerous dystopian science fiction books. Yet the achievements of Gallant's team are particularly impressive, since the scientists have actually decoded brain signals generated by moving pictures. Our natural visual experience is like watching a movie, said Shinji Nishimoto, lead author of the study, and a postdoctoral researcher in Gallant's lab. And I actually watched the video there. It's pretty basic stuff. I mean, it's basically like they took a video of a bird, had the person watch it, and then decoded that. And it's basically just like a blob moving across the screen. But you can tell what they're doing there. And it's kind of impressive that they actually pulled some usable video out of someone's mind.
Actually, I heard a story that's quite similar to this that was a couple of months ago, I believe. Somebody had actually done the same type of thing, but to a cat. And they were able to get very, very grainy images from the cat's brain, essentially showing what it was seeing. And the whole point of the story was essentially showing that cats were actually kind of overlaying feline features over, you know, human faces to convey emotion, essentially. So they could essentially, you know, convey emotion easier. It's the same reason why we you know, give human traits to animals and stuff, you know, cats and dogs and stuff like that, is so we can better interpret their emotions better. And they had something quite similar. It was quite so blurry. It was you could kind of tell a little bit that it was a little bit clearer, but, you know, totally different technology whenever you're using it on a cat compared to a human. You know, humans are much more complex. But this is so cool.
Absolutely. And I mean, how many people hasn't, like, everyone wakes up in the morning and goes, that's a really weird dream, I want to record that. We're actually a step closer to this now. In 20 years, you might actually be able to record your dream and show it to someone, so it's not the boring trying to explain to someone the craziness that happened when really you can't portray that to anyone. Of course, we got more good tech coming out here. In magnetic cloak news, thanks to Psychros for this. Cloaking magnetic fields, the first anti-magnet device was developed. Spanish researchers have designed what they believe to be a new type of magnetic cloak, which shields objects from external magnetic fields, while at the same time preventing any magnetic internal fields from leaking outside, making the cloak undetectable. The development of such a device, described as an anti-magnet, could offer many beneficial applications, such as protecting a ship's hull from mines designed to detonate when a magnetic field is detected, or allowing patients with pacemakers or cochlear implants to use medical equipment. In their study, published today, Friday, September 23rd, in the Institute of Physics and the German Physical Society's New Journal of Physics, researchers have proved that a cloak could be built using practical and available materials and technologies and used to develop an array of applications. Take, for example, a patient with a pacemaker undergoing an MRI scan. If an MRI's large magnetic field interacts with the pacemaker, it can cause serious damage to both the device and the patient. The metal in the pacemaker can also interact with and distort the MRI's large magnetic field, affecting the machine's detection capabilities. Researchers from the Universitat Autonoma de Barcelona are aware of the technology that can also be used by criminals to dodge security systems, for example, in airports and shops. But they are confident that the new research could benefit society in a positive way, while the risks could be minimized by informing security officials about potential devices, enabling them to participate and neutralize problems. Lead author, Professor Alvar Sanchez, said, The ideas of this device and their potential applications are far-reaching. However, it is conceivable that it could also be used for reducing the magnetic signature of forbidden objects, with the consequent threat to security. For these reasons, the research should be taken into account by security officials in order to design safer detection systems and protocols. The anti-magnet has been designed to consist of several layers. The inner layer would consist of a superconducting material that would function to stop a magnetic field from leaking inside the cloak, which would be very useful to cloak certain metals.
One possible application I see for this here is, you know, shielding hard drives and stuff like that, you know? If you don't have solid-state hard drives, or, you know, you can use this to shield those hard drives and essentially make it to where if a magnet's put on it, it's not going to mess with it. Which is great, you know, it's also cutting down on electromagnetic interference. You know, having this coating really could make a huge deal, you know? You coat things with it, and so on and so forth, you're essentially cutting down on electromagnetic fields. So, you know, I think this is pretty damn cool. I really think that this stuff really is, you know, a step forward in helping shield, you know, electromagnetic radiation from coming out of devices. And I think they really should be, because, nobody likes pollution in their airwaves.
Those people from the air stories that who couldn't be around electromagnetic radiation, either for psychological reasons or for actual physical reasons, we could give these to these guys, like, give them, like, a belt or whatever that shields them from the magnetic fields around them. Could help. In Cyberpunk World News, thanks to Fat Ninja, MerchantService.com, Florida Credit Processor, offers free AK-47 to customers. Now, I should actually mention, they're not actually giving away an AK-47, they're giving away a voucher for an AK-47. Credit card signing bonuses have been appearing in many forms as of late, but one Florida credit processing company's idea of customer service, or customer incentive, is nothing less than a bona fide assault weapon. Obviously, this person has a certain slant writing this article. Last Thursday, MerchantService.com, Sarasota-based company specializing in equipment and credit processing for business, announced that it would offer the highest volume customers a voucher for a free AK-47 rifle worth up to $750. According to the New Times of Broward and Palm Beach, the company is offering the gun as part of a broader campaign to empower merchants against violence through the use of God, Guns, and Guts. Okay. We launched the No Merchant Victims campaign because it's our goal to promote societal expectation change, said Gino Kozlerich, president of MerchantService.com, told Orlando's Fox 35 on Monday. And it is from the right of criminals to make you, and that is from the right of criminals to make you into a victim. We want to change that so criminals have the expectation of facing lethal force through the commission of a crime. Still, if not interested, the customers can trade the voucher for cash.
Well, you know, I'm kind of confused as to what exactly the businesses would be doing with these AK-47s. I mean, that's kind of a... I mean, they're not offering this to people, they're offering this to businesses, which kind of confuses me. I mean, I understand that the whole thing's political, and the, you know, the company is, you know, Second Amendment supporters, you know,
well,
whatever.
I'm gonna guess here,
cool.
Because it sounds like they're dealing with, because this doesn't sound like a big bank, this sounds more like a little website-based thing. They're probably offering credit card services to, like, businesses and stuff like that, like the Interact debit things and whatnot. So they're probably offering it to, like, storefronts and stuff like that. So, you know, I guess they're thinking AK under the counter, you won't get robbed.
Over penetration much? 7.60x39? Yeah. How about we give them a 9mm pistol and everybody's happy?
How about we just let everyone carry their own gun? There, problem solved.
Yep, that works.
Okay, moving right along into some scarier news here. In tracking news, thanks to the doctor. Stingray phone tracker fuels constitutional clash, and this was sent to me by goddamn everyone. For more than a year, federal authorities pursued a man that's called simply the Hacker. After only using a little-known cell phone tracking device, the Stingray, they were able to zero in on a California home and make the arrest. This sounds suspiciously like the plot of a movie I've seen once. Stingrays are developed to locate a mobile phone even when it's not being used to make a call. The Federal Bureau of Investigation considers the devices to be so critical that they have a policy of deleting the data gathered on their use, mainly to keep suspects in the dark about their capabilities, the FBI official and the Wall Street Journal told the Wall Street Journal in response to inquiries. The Stingray's role in nabbing the alleged hacker, Daniel David Rigmaiden, is shaping up as a possible test of legal standards for using these devices in investigations. The FBI says it obtains appropriate court approval to use the device. Stingrays are one of several new technologies used by law enforcement to track people's locations, often without a search warrant. These techniques are driving a constitutional debate on whether the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits unreasonable search and seizures, which was written before the digital age, is keeping pace with the times. On November 8th, the Supreme Court will hear arguments over whether or not police will need a warrant before secretly installing a GPS device in a suspect's car and tracking him for an extended period. In both Senate and House, new bills will require a warrant before tracking his cell phone's location. And on Thursday, in U.S. District Court of Arizona, Judge David G. Campbell is set to hear a request by Mr. Rigmaiden, who is facing fraud charges. To have information about the government's secret techniques disclosed to him so he can use it in his defense. Mr. Rigmaiden maintains his innocence, saying that using stingrays to locate devices in homes with a valid warrant disregards the United States Constitution and is illegal.
Well, you know, this really doesn't come as any surprise, and as usual, you know, if you are doing something, you know, regardless if it's legal, illegal or not, if for whatever reason, you know, whatever you're doing, just cover your ass, you know? I really have no idea what people are doing out there. I have no idea, nor do I really care. But, you know, if you're doing something, you know, just best policy is to cover your ass, you know? If you're going to be using a cell phone, you know, use a burner cell phone, take out the battery, toss it, break it, and then, there you go. You know, you don't have to worry about it. You know, and generally, you know, This really, like I said, this doesn't come as a surprise here. The FBI and the Department of Justice and everybody else have been, you know, they've been doing GPS tracking and cell phone tracking and online tracking, and you know, they want your data, so don't even put it out there.
No, is I want to know what the hell the Stingray device actually does, because the fact we can track cell phones, we can do cell phone triangulation on cell towers, or if there's a GPS device built in, we can track it using GPS. So, I mean, we have all these methods of tracking cell phones anyway. The phone company can do it, and they'll do it for the police with a warrant. So what's with this device? Is it just because of the fact they don't need a warrant to use it, because they can just drive around with it and pick up the cell signal? Or does this device do something else that they're not telling us, which I think is pretty likely, given that the FBI themselves said that after they use the device, they delete all the data so people can't figure out what it does. I think it's doing something a little more than just tracking a phone there. And I really hope this guy wins, not because I think he's innocent, I don't know much about his case, but because of the fact I want to see what that device does.
Oh, agreed. I completely agree. You know, something hinky is going on here, and I'd like to have a little more data on that. Thank you very much.
Well, ending off a little bit on a bit of a hopeful note here. Spray on glass. Thanks to Psychros for this. Spray on liquid glass is about to revolutionize almost everything. Of course, reporters always go nuts with that whole revolutionize everything. Spray-on liquid glass is transparent, non-toxic, and can protect virtually any surface against almost any damage from hazards such as water, UV radiation, dirt, heat, and bacterial infections. The coating is also flexible and breathable, which makes it suitable for an enormous array of products. The liquid glass spray, technically termed silicon dioxide ultra-thin layering, so SiO2 ultra-thin layering, consists of almost pure silicon dioxide, silica, the normal compound in glass, extracted from quartz sand. Water or ethanol is added, depending on type of surface to be coated. There are no additives, and a nanoscale glass coating bonds to the surface because of quantum forces involved. According to the manufacturers, liquid glass has a long-lasting antibacterial effect because microbes lining on the surface cannot divide or replicate easily. Liquid glass was invented in Turkey, and the patent is held by Nanopool, a family-owned German company. That's a cyberpunk name. Research on the subject was carried out by the Saarbrücken Institute for New Materials. Nanopool is already in negotiations with the UK, in the UK with a small number of companies, and with the National Health Service, with a view to its widespread adoption. The liquid glass spray produces a water-resistant coating, only around 100 nanometers, 15 to 30 molecules thick. On this nanoscale, the glass is highly flexible and breathable. The coating is environmentally harmless and non-toxic. It is easy to clean using only a water and a simple wipe with a damp cloth. It repels bacteria, water, and dirt, and resists heat, UV light, and even acids. UK project manager with Nanopool, Neil McClelland, said that almost every product you purchase will be coated in liquid glass. Food processing companies in Germany have already carried out trials of the spray and found sterile surfaces usually needed to be cleaned with strong bleach to keep them sterile. Needed only hot wire rinse if they're coated with the liquid glass. The levels of sterility were higher for the glass coated surfaces. The surfaces remained sterile for months.
Now, you know, as an EMT, what I see this here is essentially coat everything in, you know, every hard surface in the ambulance with this stuff. You know? And I think that this would be just absolutely great, you know, because we have to scrub and scrub and scrub and scrub and use, you know, crazy industrial strength cleaners to get stuff, you know, clean in the back of an ambulance, and stuff just gets everywhere. So, you know, I think that this would be really cool, you know. Also stuff like cell phones, you know, keyboards, everything like that. If it's, you know, not transmitting bacteria very well and it's not able to reproduce on it, then, you know, your keyboard's not going to be nearly as dirty. You know, it'll be really easy to clean as well. So I think this is really, really cool, and I think we could use this on a ton of different products, and it really would make our life a little bit easier.
One thing I seen in the chat here, someone mentioned, Legion mentioned that, but the word spray kind of indicates that the application doesn't seem safe to me. Well, that may be the case. They don't actually say whether it's safe when you're applying it, but there are a lot of things that aren't safe when you apply it. I think the long-term effects here they're talking about is, like, after it's applied and dry and stuff like that, it has no effects. So, I mean, it may need to be applied in, like, a spray booth or something like that, but I don't really see it as much of a problem as long as they know the effects of the fumes before you go and do it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this stuff would probably be really bad if you breathed it in, you know? But, you know, before we go into Recomedia here, I just have one little update about the whole OnStar thing. We reported on the OnStar thing last week, and we just had one little development here. Is that OnStar has actually said that they will be changing their terms of service, to where they're not gonna track you if you opt out. You can opt into it, but you're opted out as soon as you cancel service by default, which is always a good thing. But, you know, still, after that, I still wouldn't trust them. Absolutely not. So my recommendation is still to rip the shit out of your car. That's what I would do. So, you know, just as everybody, you know, do not trust these guys. They, you know, that's really questionable what they did there. I really question their ethics for even bothering to come up with that. So, you know, just a little thing there. Rip that shit out. Now moving on to Recomedia, we have How to Wreck a Train, the USA Experiments to Derail Trains, thanks to Jules Verboven. In March 1944, the United States National Defense Resource Committee of and Office of Strategic Services, which is the OSS, which is the predecessor to the CIA there, performed a number of experiments on the Claiborne Polk Military Railroad to help determine the best way to derail trains. And this is a live link link to a video there. And it's really interesting, you know, and again, anything that you see coming from the USS is bound to be pretty damn interesting. And then, also thanks to Jules Verboen, we have a bunch of videos about locks, keys, and a whole bunch of related stuff. You know, lots of YouTube videos about all kinds of good stuff here, you know, always good to know. I do not recommend using it for, you know, to commit any type of crime, but hey, you know, it's always good to know, you know. You know, do security audits on your house, do security audits on your car, figure out exactly what it is that, your weakness is. Now for our cyberpunk kit today, we have the UC foldable machine gun, which is, you know, pretty old. It's been around since the 80s. You know, it's been around the block a couple of times. Any of you that are plugged into the gun world will probably recognize it. But, you know, to some people, it might be a little interesting piece of kit. You know, it's a good thing just to remember and, you know, keep an eye out on. And Magpul actually did something quite similar a couple of years ago. They also had a, concealable pistol that was quite similar to this. But, you know, this is pretty damn cool. You know, it's very nondescript and it's a pretty badass submachine gun. And for Daily Hack today, you have a wind turbine battery charger. Hit your parts bin and set aside an afternoon to build a wind turbine that that recharges batteries. You can see two AA batteries hang out the side of this small generator, and you only need a few parts to make this happen. And chances are you have them sitting in your junk bin already. Now, just as a note, these will, you know, charge any standard, you know, rechargeable AA batteries in about 10 hours. And, you know, completely free, you know, off the grid, all that stuff. So, it's, you know, it's a pretty interesting little thing to have around.
I also like to add a comment on that last daily hack there. I was looking at the part list and stuff like this. Stuff like floppy drives and stuff. So, literally, stuff you won't miss. So, I definitely check that out. But don't worry, we will be back next week to make sure you can get the news you need to survive. If you cannot contribute to the show, please distribute it. We'd like to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have any news stories or pertinent information you want to send us, you can reach us at news@rostudios.org. That's news@rostudios.org. If you like the music in the background, check out a compilation album sent in by the Doctor called Upload 2011. It's themed on transhumanism and released by Zero State Media. We fade out now with a track called No Strand by Ratatat. Remember everyone, we cannot defeat the enemy if we are at each other's throats, so until next time, that's what Server said. End of line. ¶¶